Welcome to Zichru Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're in Sechus Shabbos, Daf Yud Zayin. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, the rabbis enacted that any movable item that has the thickness of a goat, a mardea, approximately one-third of a tefach wide, which means it has a one tefach circumference, can serve as an ohel, transmit tumah, and render the person an avatuma. Now Rabbi Akiva explains the reason for the prohibition was as follows. Midaraisa, a farmer carrying a goat over a grave, becomes a Rishon through direct contact with the goat. Since he might mistakenly believe that the cause of his tumah status was the goat serving as an ohel instead of his direct contact with it, he might conclude that an ohel in general only makes someone a Rishon and therefore only requires a day-long tumah instead of the seven-day purification. The rabbis therefore decreed that any movable object that has a one tefach circumference or one-third of a tefach wide which touches a person while serving as an ohel renders a person an avatuma. Point number two, another one of the 18 enactments was a decree regarding replanted truma. Now, midaraisa, when truma is replanted, the resultant growth has the status of chulin and may be eaten by non-kohanim once the standard separations of trumas and maisers have been done. The rabbis were concerned that a kohen in possession of a tamei truma would intend to replant it in the sowing season so the new growth would be deemed tahor and inadvertently come to eat that tamei truma in the meantime. They therefore enacted that the produce that results from the replanted truma has the same status as the original truma. If the truma was tahor, the produce was tahor. And if the truma was tameh, then the produce was tameh. Therefore, there would be no point for a kohen to replant his tameh truma. And point number three, the bread, oil, wine, and the daughters of idolaters were prohibited as one of the 18 enactments. Now, prohibiting eating their bread and oil was a way to reduce socializing and prevent intermarriage. According to some, the prohibition of bread only applies to bread cooked in a private home, not commercial bread. In addition to prohibiting drinking their wine, the rabbis also forbid getting any benefit, any hanah from it, as a concern of yayin nesach, of wine poured as a libation to idols. And while marrying non-Jewish women is prohibited from the Torah, this decree of the rabbis prohibited yichud with them, being in seclusion with them. All right, so let's review. Number one, the rabbis enacted that any movable item that has the thickness of a goat of a mardea, approximately one-third of a tefach wad, which means there's a one tefach circumference, can serve as an ohel, it can transmit tuma, and render the person an avatuma. And Rabbi Akiva explains the reason for the prohibition was as follows. Midaraisa, a farmer carrying a goat over a grave becomes a rishon through direct contact with the goat. Since he might mistakenly believe that the cause of his tuma status was the goat serving as an ohel, instead of his direct contact with it, he might conclude that an ola in general only makes someone a rishon and only requires a day-long tumah instead of the seven-day purification. The rabbis therefore decreed that any movable object that has a one tefach circumference, which means it's one-third of a tefach wide, which touches a person while serving as an ol, renders the person an avatuma. Number two, another one of the 18 enactments is the decree regarding replanted truma. Midaraisa, when truma is replanted, the resultant growth has the status of chulin and may be eaten by non-kohanim once the standard hafrashas, the separations of trumas and maisers, have been done. The rabbis were concerned that a kohen in possession of tamei truma would intend to replant it in the sowing season so the new growth would be deemed tahor, and inadvertently he might come to eat that tamei truma in the meantime. They therefore enacted that the produce that results from replanted truma has the same status as the original truma. If the truma was tahor, the produce was tahor. And if the truma was tamei, then the produce was tamei. Therefore, there'd be no point for a kohen to replant his tamei truma. And finally, the bread, oil, wine, and the daughters of idolaters were prohibited as one of the 18 enactments. Prohibiting eating their bread and oil was a way to reduce socializing and prevent intermarriage. According to some, the prohibition of bread only applies to bread cooked in a private home, not commercial bread. In addition to prohibiting drinking their wine, the rabbis also forbid getting any benefit from it as a concern of yayin nesach, which is wine poured as a libation to idols. And while marrying non-Jewish women is prohibited from the Torah, this decree of the rabbis prohibited yichud with them, being in seclusion with them. All right, so now we go to our siman. So our siman for Daf Yud Zayin is a used car, because Yud Zayin sounds like used car. Here we go. The used car salesman starts to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard after failing with his replanting tamei truma scheme and no one wanting his bread, oil, or wine either. Once again, in slow motion. The used car salesman, used car, that reminds us we're on Daf Yud Zayin. The used car salesman starts to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard, which reminds us that the rabbis enacted that any movable item that has the thickness of an ox goad, approximately one-third of a tefach wide or one tefach circumference, can serve as an ohel, transmit tumah, and render the person an avatuma. And Rabbi Akiva explains the reason for the prohibition as follows. Midaraisa, a farmer carrying a goad over a grave becomes a Rishon through direct contact with the goad. Since he might mistakenly believe that the cause of his tumah status was the goad serving as an ohel instead of his direct contact with it, he might conclude that an ohel in general only makes someone a Rishon and only requires a day-long tumah instead of the seven-day purification. The rabbis therefore decreed that any movable object that has a one tefach circumference, which means it's one-third of a tefach wide, which touches a person while serving as an ohel, renders the person an avatuma. So the used car salesman starts to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard. After failing with his replanting tamei truma scheme, which reminds us that another one of the 18 enactments was a decree regarding replanted truma. Midaraisa, when truma is replanted, the resultant growth has the status of chulin and may be eaten by non-kohanim once the standard separations of trumas and maisers have been done. The rabbis were concerned that a kohen in possession of tamei truma would intend to replant it in the sowing season, so the new growth would be deemed tahor, and inadvertently he'd come to eat that tamei truma in the meantime. They therefore enacted that the produce that results from replanted truma has the same status as the original truma. If the truma was tahor, the produce was tahor. If the truma was tamei, then the produce was tamei. Therefore, there'd be no point for a kohen to replant his tamei truma. So the used car salesman started to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard, after failing with his replanting tamei truma scheme, and no one wanting his bread, oil, or wine either. Which reminds us that the bread, oil, wine, and the daughters of my daughters were prohibited as one of the 18 enactments. Prohibiting eating their bread and oil was a way to reduce socializing and prevent intermarriage. According to some, the prohibition of bread only applies to bread cooked in a private home, not commercial bread. In addition to prohibiting drinking their wine, the rabbis also forbid getting any benefit from it as a concern of Yai Nesach, which is wine poured as a libation to idols. And while marrying non-Jewish women is prohibited from the Torah, the rabbi's decree prohibited yichud with them, seclusion with them. So once again, the used car salesman started to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard after failing with his replanting tamei truma scheme and no one wanting his bread, oil, or wine either. So now it's time for our four blah bah chazora, Daf Yud Gimel. So the Simmer Daf Yud Gimel is a bar mitzvah boy. So here we go. The bar mitzvah boy's PowerPoint presentation on the topic of eating meat and milk at the same table, which reminds of Shimon Gamliel, says that two lodgers can eat at the same table even though one is eating meat and the other is eating milk. Rav Chanin bar Ami said in the name of Shmuel that this is only when they don't know each other and therefore it's unlikely they would take food from one another. So the bar mitzvah boy's PowerPoint presentation on the topic of eating meat and milk at the same table concluded with his acceptance of 18 enactments, which reminds us that in the next mission of the Perek, we learned that the Rabbanim were visiting Hanani ben Chizkiyahu ben Garon in his upper chamber. And a vote was taken on a number of issues. Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel, and 18 halachas were enacted on that day. So it concluded with his acceptance of 18 enactments and a moving speech on the importance of cherishing one's troubles and resolving contradictions. Because the Gemara provides some background on Hanani ben Chizkiyahu and his achievements. Our Braisa identifies him and his colleagues as the authors of Megillas Tainus. This is a scroll compiled at the end of Bais Sheni, which lists dates that are treated as minor festivals which fasting is prohibited on account of miraculous salvations which occurred on them. The Braisa explains that they wrote the Megillah because they cherished the troubles that befell them. What this means is that they understood that they were fully deserving of the hardships and cherished that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had miraculously saved Klal Yisrael in those days. They therefore established those dates to be celebrated as minor holidays and record them for posterity. And the Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav that the Hanani ben Chizkiyahu should be remembered favorably for reconciling all the seeming contradictions between Sefer Yechezkel and the Torah. He secluded himself in the upper chamber for an extended period of time until he reconciled the various psukim. Sefer Yechezkel would have been hidden away if he hadn't done so. So once again, the Bar Mitzvah boy's PowerPoint presentation on the topic of eating meat and milk at the same table concluded with his acceptance of 18 enactments and a moving speech on the importance of cherishing one's troubles and resolving contradictions. Daf Yadol. So the symbol for Daf Yadol is hands. So here we go. A sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim, Yadayim, that reminds us we're on Daf Yadol. A sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim, which reminds us, the seventh enactment was that if one's hands touch Truma, the Truma becomes Pasul, and therefore one's required to wash his hands before touching Truma. In fact, Netilas Yadayim was instituted at three separate times. Shlomo Melech instituted that unrinsed hands were considered Tamei when touching Kadshim. They were regarded, though, as Tahor when it came to touching Truma. Hillel and Shammai decreed that unrinsed hands were considered Tamei when touching Truma as well, but their decree wasn't accepted. And last, in the upper chamber of the Hanani ben Chizkiyahu ben Garon, the students of Hillel and Shammai argued about the status of one's hands in regards to Truma. Beis Shammai held that unwashed hands should be considered Tamei for Truma and require washing, while Beis Hillel disagreed. When the vote was held, Beis Shammai, being the majority, prevailed. So a sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim was posted outside the ancient pools of cave water, which reminds us the fourth enactment states that one who washes his head and the greater part of his body with drawn water after he was tovel correct and was now tahor becomes tameh. And the reason for this was that originally people were tameh would immerse themselves in pools of cave water that were stagnant, which did make them tahor. However, after the immersion, they would then pour over themselves clean water that was drawn from vessels in order to wash away the dirty water. Eventually, people mistakenly started to say that it was the drawn water that purified them, not the cave water. The sage was then concerned that those who are tameh would immerse themselves in draw water alone, which is not a kosher mikveh. So to discourage this, the rabbis decreed that one who washes his head and the greater part of his body with drawn water after he was tovel becomes tameh. So a sign about the early history of Netilas Yadayim was posted outside the ancient pools of cave water as mice nibbling on truma scurried around far away from the Tanakh on the shelf. Which reminds us that sixth enem was that a sefer Torah, Nevim and Ksuvim, will make truma which it touches posel. Where Mesharshi explains that the reason for this was that people used to store their sefer Torah, Nevim and Ksuvim together with their truma, reasoning that it was appropriate because they're both kodesh. They're very holy. The Rabbanan saw that this practice resulted in the svarim becoming damaged by mice that were attracted to the food. They therefore decreed that the scrolls would make the truma possible in order that people would not store their truma near them. So once again, a sign about the earliest history of Netilas Yadayim was posted outside the ancient pools of cave water, as mice nibbling on truma scurried around far away from the Tanakh on the shelf. Dav Tesvav. So the symbol for Dav Tesvav is a fruit bowl, because Tesvav 2, Tu B'Shvat, and we're using a fruit bowl. So here we go. The fruit bowl reminding us we're on Dav Tesvav. The fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together, which reminds us the Rav Huna state that Hillel and Shammai only argued in three cases. What's the minimum amount of flour required that the dough would be subject to the separation of challah? What's the minimum amount of drawn water, Maim Shu'uvim, that will disqualify a mikvah? And if a woman becomes a Nida, is retroactively declared tameh from the time of her last examination. So the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from chutz la'aretz into the glass bowl. So that reminds us, one of the decrees of the early Tanaim was that the land outside of Eretz Yisrael was to be considered tameh. There were gazu tumal Eretz Ha'amim. The Gemara clarifies the background of this decree. Yossi ben Yoezu Yisrael and Yossi ben Yochanan Yishushalayim decreed that the land outside Eretz Yisrael was considered tameh. Their concern was that since the idolaters did not mark their graves, any place in their lands was suspect of containing a grave, and unmarked graves were also more likely to be plowed over, resulting in scattered bone fragments. Therefore, if truma came in contact with its dirt, the truma would not be allowed to be eaten. However, the truma was not allowed to be burned either. In the words of the Gemara, the truma is suspended. The Rabban of 80 years before the destruction of Bais Sheni later expanded the decree to include its airspace as well. They were concerned about the graves imparting truma via roof truma to someone passing over it. Finally, in Usha, the rabbis added a stringency and required burning truma that came in contact with its dirt. However, truma that came in contact with the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, of the non-Jewish nations, would still remain with its status of being suspended. So the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from chutz la'aretz into the glass bowl made from sand, making it tameh. Which reminds us that Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan decreed that glassware should be susceptible to tumah. Rav Yochanan said in the name of Rav Ish Lakish that the reason why they enacted this decree is that since the glassware comes from sand, a type of earth, it should have the same halacha as earthenware, a klicheres, which is susceptible to tuma. So once again, the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from chutz la'aretz into the glass bowl made from sand, making it tameh. Daf Tezayin, so the symbol for Tezayin is toe, so here we go. At the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. Toes, that reminds us we're on Daf Tezayin. At the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, which reminds us that even though glass is similar to metal in as much as it can be melted down and refashioned, it's different in the following way. Metalware, which is tummy, when broken down, becomes tahor. When it's refashioned into a new vessel, the rabbis decreed that it reverts to its old status of tumah. Glassware, which is tummy, when broken down, also becomes tahor. But when it's remade into a new vessel, it doesn't revert to its old tumah status. The reason is that since the tumah of glassware is only rabbinic, we don't impose the law of the restoration of an old tumah, which is also only rabbinic, which we're going to talk about in the third point. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, but her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, which reminds us the Rav Ashi is of the opinion that glassware has the halachas of tumah as earthenware, as a klicheres, and not metalware. The Gemara asks that if glassware has the same halachas of tumah as earthenwares in a kli cheres, then why then does it contract tumah when it's touched by something tummy on its outer surface, whereas earthenware only becomes tummy when a tummy object goes inside of it? The Gemara answers that being that the transparency of the glass enables one to see the interior of the glass on the outside, it in effect makes the outside surface of the vessel equivalent to the inner cavity. Therefore, when something which is tameh touches the outer surface, it is as if it's within the inside of the vessel, and the vessel becomes tameh as a result. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tameh glassware and metalware with their toes, but her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass of the rabbis, and they told her that the fixed metalware would still become tameh. Which reminds us, the reason the rabbis enacted a decree that tameh metalware that became tahor through breakage should revert to its old tumah status when refashioned was as follows. Midaraisa, a metal vessel that became tameh through contact with a corpse, or being in the same enclosed space as a corpse, requires a week-long purification process, which includes sprinkling mechatas, the waters containing the ashes of the paraduma, on the third and seventh day, as well as immersion in the mikvah on the seventh day. So one way to expedite the purification process is to break the tameh vessel, which renders it tahor, and then repair it. Piercing a hole in the vessel as well would be sufficient to consider it broken. The rabbis feared that as a result of this loophole, the institution of mechatas would fall into disuse, so they decreed that the old tumah status would return when the vessel was repaired. Queen Shalzion tried to use this break and repair method at her son's chasna when the utensils were tameh, but the rabbanon told her that the old tumah status returned. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tameh glassware and metalware with their toes, but her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her the fixed metalware would still become tameh. All right, now it's time for our pop quiz of 10 questions. Here we go. Number one, which stuff do we learn about the sixth enactment that a Sefer Torah, Nevim, or Ksuvim are posel truma? That's on Daf Yadal. Good. Number two, what do we learn that the decree that carrying an ox goad in a graveyard makes one an avatuma? That's on Daf Yud Zayin. Good. Number three, where do we learn the reason why, according to Rav Ashi, that glassware contracts tumah when touched on its outer surface is because of its transparency? That's on Daf Tez Zayin. Good. Number four, where do we learn that the decree that when tameh truma is replanted, the produce has the same status and it's tameh? That's on Daf Yud Zayin. Good. Number five, where do we learn that glassware that was tameh broken and then refashioned does not revert to its old status of tumah? That's on Daf Tez Zayin. Good. Number six, where do we learn that one should not sit on a sick person's bed because the Shekhinah is there? That's on Daf Yud Beis. Good. Number seven, where do we have the mission that mentions there were 18 enactments? That's on Daf Yud Gimel. Good. Number eight, where do we learn that the reason for the Rabbanan that tameh metalware that was broken and repaired reverts to its old tumah status was out of concern for disuse of the mechatas? That's on Daf Tez Zayin. Great. Number nine, which stuff do we learn about the three times that Netilas Yadayim was instituted? That's on Daf Yadal. Good. And finally, number 10, what do we learn that when one gives a gift, one needs to inform the recipient of the gift, example being Hashem giving Klal Yisrael Shabbos? That's on Daf Yud. Great. Excellent. So we now conclude the pop quiz. This is Rabbi Avraham Golder from Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.